My name's Darren, I'm an addict. What a fantastic, what a beautiful turnout. What a lovely introduction. Thank you, Paul. My ego says he should have said a little bit more. My self-esteem says he didn't mean it anyway. What a fantastic turnout. God's been good. We've had sun since Thursday. It's been pissing down all month before that. Amazing, amazing. I think it's important, you know, before I say another word, for me to just give thanks to the gracious, loving, merciful hand of God for the air that I breathe. I also think it's important for me to just throw it out there now and let you all know that I am not speaking on behalf of Cocaine Anonymous. I'm not an expert on recovery. I'm not a fountain of knowledge or wisdom or anything like that. I'm not a circuit-speaking superstar, nothing like that. So if you're expecting to hear anything profound, you might as well go and get a coffee next door, because you ain't going to hear that from me. Do you know what I mean? What I have got is I've got my own personal experience, the truth as I see it. You know, and I've learned that the darkness, the depression, the despair of the past is an asset for the life I live now, because in that is the key to happiness and freedom for other men that are receptive to doing something different. You know, so that's what I've got. There's so many people to thank. I don't want to go into a big, long, drawn-out spiel. Chris Cross, lovely, thank you. Richie L, the rest of the speaker guys, all of you. What an honour, what a privilege, do you know what I mean? And I'm aware we hear many people, what an honour, what a privilege, but I mean that from the bottom of my heart, do you know what I mean? You know, I come out of the bin shed in North London sticking needles in my arm. How on earth did I get here? It's nothing to do with me. You know, that's the truth. What I will say is this, for anyone who's new, you know, the 12-step granddaddy of all recovery programmes is in the book. I never knew that. All I knew was about the meeting. You know, and we'll discuss that as we move. You know, and if you happen to be foreign, welcome to the UK Department of Cocaine Anonymous. Yeah. And just to add to that, if you ain't already gathered, I speak with an inner city London accent, so you might want to sit next to someone from the UK, because you might need this talk translated. Yeah. I've been drinking this water alcoholically. I've got a couple of litres, we might need some more. Right, there's a piece in the book, in the doctor's opinion, it says there are types normal in every respect, except in the effect the alcohol and the drugs has upon them. They are often able, intelligent, friendly people. Well, I ain't one of them. From minute one, I was a very easily led, painfully self-conscious, deeply insecure, frightened dude before drugs and alcohol ever came into my arena. I grew up in a home environment. At times, the truth is, it weren't very nice. My father was a very unpredictable man. He ruled the roost. We lived by his will. You know, when he clicked his fingers and said, jump, son, you didn't say, how I, dad. You just started jumping, and he didn't fucking stop until he said so. Right? And that's the way it was. He was an alcoholic and a drug addict. God bless him. He's been dead for some years now. And if he came home out of his head on heroin, yeah, it was okay, because there was peace in the house, because he'd just be like this. Yeah, if he came on with some heavy-hitting, high-strength lagering system, you was in trouble. It was like the Wild West in the ass. Yeah, so everyone was in fit, you know, and it was about walking on eggshells, right, and that's the way it was. And the fear was sickening, and it was a fear that I carried with me wherever I went, and I just couldn't seem to shake it on my own resources. This is just looking back in hindsight. I wasn't awake to that. So when drugs and alcohol went into my body, they give me power. The alcohol and the drugs allowed me to feel comfortable being me, so I could just move through the day with you. You know, You know, I'm aware there's many different types of men and women in the room. One guy might be a builder, this guy's an architect, this lady's a housewife, you know, and whatever it may be, you know. So, you know, I'm going to say what I'm going to say, and I don't say anything to separate myself from you. All I've got is my own experience, and that's what you're going to get. You know, for me, I weren't a party animal. You know, I weren't someone that went out on a Thursday, took too much cocaine, woke up with a hangover, didn't do it for a few days, then done it again. You know, for me, drug addiction was a way of life. And it was the only way of life that I ever knew until I came here and you showed me different. You know, and it went like this. It went from the bin shed sniffing glue, out into the cancer estate, smoking joints and drinking bottles of cider. From that to the acid house. Acid! When that hit London. And, you know, dancing on ecstasy in warehouses all night, deeply self-conscious, even on drugs. You know, and then it went from that to, you know, cocaine sniff, it was not really my thing, but I took it, I've done a lot of it. I'll give you a little bit of it. It went like this. We'll all meet up on a Friday. Nice Ralph Lauren shirt like I've got on there. Pair of Gucci loafers, nice Armani, lock knife in your pocket, big wad of money, bag of cocaine, none of which was mine. It was always someone else's. So we'd meet up, go into the local boozer, bar, whatever you want to call it. And I'd walk in there like this. Strange. I'd walk up to the bar, say to the barmaid, "What's happening, darling, you all right?" Yeah. "Get yourself a large gin and tonic. Give her one. I'll have a large vodka." With money that weren't mine. I'll do things like that. And because as well as this disease, I suffer with something called IGS. And that stands for Imaginary Gangster Syndrome. My perception of myself, the world around me and the people in it was twisted from minute one. As I look out my head at the world, it's just wrong. So I'd snort cocaine savagely, and the truth is this, I didn't even like it. I didn't even like it. I'd just stand against the wall all night doing everyone in the pubs thinking. You know what I mean? With a jaw swinging like a camel. Right? Trying to hold it together. Like, because I don't want to look like an idiot in front of you. Because I'm absolutely devastated with life-wrecking levels of pride. Things like this are happening. I'm talking to someone here. Out of the corner of my eye, I just catch someone talking to his pal, but our eyes happen to meet. My mind will say he's talking about you. So I say something to the chap I'm with, get him to go over there, start a big tear-up. The pub gets smashed to pieces based on my mind, it weren't even real. It weren't even about me. I just thought it was. So, if I got out of there alive, or in one piece, we go to the kebab house on the corner, order a kebab, trying to eat that with a rubber cocaine jaw. Straight. Like, then I'd probably get a bit too lippy with someone. Get a good beating. Then wake up in the police station in North London, knocking on the cell door saying, "Governor, how did I get here? What am I here for?" You know, and that for me is when it was good. Yeah, then it weren't so good. Then it was absolutely pitiful with a capital P. You know, and I can do the alcohol and the drugs thing to a degree, and I can survive in that world to a degree to get what I need to get. What I could never do is sobriety. You take the alcohol and the drugs off of me, you might as well strip me bare, and I'll get a real uncomfortable feeling. It's called fear that you can see that. And I'll do anything I can to cover that up because I feel absolutely raw. And the experiences that I've had in the past of sobriety were unhealthy and they weren't very nice. You know, and that's being polite about it. Like, so a lot of the times I'd end up in trouble and I'd end up in some kind of nut house for vulnerable adults with drug and alcohol problems. And, strange, isn't it? Like, I go in there with a catalogue of destruction left behind me, right? But within about, detox is done, got about 6 weeks under my belt, the ego's rebuilt. I look back at my life and say, you know what, it was just a phase you went through. Yeah? New pair of Reebok Classic on. I'm doing alright. I'm doing good. And it was stuff like this. Like the chairs would normally go round. Professional comes in. Hello, how are you all doing this morning? I just feel deeply anxious and tense. So we'll go around the group. We're going to do a feelings check this morning, okay? Ask me how I feel. It just feels like a personal attack. So we come to Mary. Hello, Mary. How are you doing this morning? Mary's just on top of the world. Hello, John. How are you doing this morning? John can just articulate extremely well how he feels. It's getting to near me. This is my mind. What am I going to say? 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 Now it's on me. Hello, Darren, young man. How are you feeling this morning? I'm optimistic and grateful. Thank you very much. As I open up my mouth, I'm going to lie to you to just get you away from me. Then we get to the back end of it. They say, you've done extremely well. You've completed the program now. Here's a little plaque or a badge or whatever they give you. By the looks of it, you're a drug addict and an alcoholic. We suggest that you go to meetings. Now, the thing is this. I knew it was evident that I was a drug addict and an alcoholic. But I never understood what it meant to be that. It's the difference. Book showed me that. So I'd be just like a nodding dog. Oh, yeah. And I'd come out of there and I'd go to the meetings that was available in my community. And it wasn't Cocaine Anonymous. You know, and so I went to Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous because that's what was there. And strange, isn't it? I'm always caught up in the material and the external. So I've got to make sure I look all right before I go to the meeting. So it was like, been on the sunbed, bit of gel in your hair. Glowing orange from the sunbed. Yeah, 3/4 length Timberland trench mech, nice brand new Timberland boots. And I walk into the meeting with that walk again. So I'd sit in there. This is what kind of environment it was. Johnny's going to do a talk tonight. Hello, Johnny. He's going to talk about what he used, what he didn't use. The lengths he went to get the money to use what he needed to use. Who he knew, who he didn't know. And then the guys are going to share back to him, and it's like a big, giant identification pit. Like, and then some of the females, no disrespect to any of the females, they're crying. Everyone's neck deep in issues, including myself, but I'll never tell you that. So I'm sitting there. I don't know if any of you can get this, but this is what happens to me. At first, I'm happy to be sober, clean. I got an element of relief. But I since found that, it was never about relief. It was always about release. It was about being set free. There's a difference. So after a little while, the shine just wears off it. The depression, who gets that sober? I just can't shake it. the resentment is just, it's like a cancerous level. Like it's causing me, I'm getting a headache. The fear is like, no, I'm a little bit scared. The fear is like, and I'm not saying too much. And I'm sitting there and I'm listening. But when I did speak, it would be utter resentment. Born out of my own fear, and I'm not even awake to what that is. I'm just naturally in that state, clean and sober. And as I look out of my head at the world, it's your fault how I feel. So after a little while of that, the beast starts talking to me and says, go and get a little bit of crack. Get just one bag of heroin and two or three cans of high-strength lager. You're going to feel better. Now, the thing is this. I'm in there with you because I'm looking for a different life. I really don't want to go back and do what I always go and do. But I can't live like that sober. So, in the end, I surrender to that voice in my mind that tells me to go and do that, and I go and get one. How can I not surrender to that? I ain't got the power to not go and do that. So I come out of it, and the last time I done it, honestly, it weren't, we hear things, didn't we, in CA, like, about believing the lie in the mind. The last experience weren't that, it was this. As I was walking to get it, I knew. Right, the likelihood is this is going to happen. You're going to spend every penny you've accumulated in this 11 months or whatever it was. Right, then you're going to sell everything materialated. Everything material you've accumulated in this 11 months. Then you're going to borrow what you can of whoever's mad enough to give you. You know, I'll never give it back. Right? Then you're probably going to go out robbing and stealing. And you might get put in Pentonville prison. But I've just done it anyway. Like, and come what may, and I'll deal with it when it comes, or I won't, whatever the case may be. So I remember getting it and I got it in my hand. So I jumped on a bus. And there's a little bit of sanity there, and it's saying to me, you could throw it out the window. You ain't took it yet. But the beast is just screaming, just go and have it. You know it's going to make you feel better. So I decided I'll go and have it. Now, the thing is this. I weren't actually involved in that decision. I just thought I was. For the real drug addicts and the real alcoholics, there is no choice. I'll just do it anyway. Then blame you for why I've done it. And that's been the story of my life. I think we'll leave it there. So I put it in me. I put it in me. And it done this. Oh. Yeah. Book calls it ease and comfort. Ease and comfort. Strange language, but ain't it true? So then I felt better for a little while, until I didn't feel better. You see, because drugs and alcohol have a tendency to just turn on me and just cut me to ribbons like a boomerang every time. But the compulsion to keep going was merciless, and I was a resourceful drug addict. You know, and I did some places that were low, but I just kept on going. Then I did another place that was lower than that, and I just kept on going. And I did another place that was lower than that, and I just kept on going. You know, I didn't know nothing about nothing. All I knew was about drugs and about alcohol and about how to get money to get more. You know, there was nothing of any substance in my life. There was nothing, you know, there was nothing even worth talking about. All we talked about was who's got what and where can we get it. That was it. A little community of rats. Like, and I end up, I'm not one of these cats that like, well, I used last night, but I'll see you up 7 o'clock tomorrow night, I'll be getting a white hearing. Excuse me? I didn't get anywhere near it for, we'll call it 3 years, another 3 years. And in the end, it was absolutely pitiful. I mean pitiful with a capital P. You know, it was about, I was running around with a shoelace in as a belt. With another geezer's trainers on, right? Playing cat and mouse with security guards in boots to chemist so I can get a £30 worth of shower gel. Go down to Ogmed's at the corner shop. Yeah, but yeah, they give me that. Then ring up Biggie G. Have you got a bit of crack and a bit of heroin? That was it. And my life consisted of that. It was like Groundhog Day every day, doing that five times a day. You know. And in the end, I didn't even have anywhere to live, but I'll just never tell you that. So knock at a geezer's house at night. He was called 20p Joe. And we'd all slag him off. Fucking out, begging him. But I'm in his flat, waiting for him to come back with a rock he just begged, but I'm better than him. So I'd knock at his door at night with a little, probably, you know what I mean, 10 or 20 pounds worth of heroin, 10 or 20 pounds worth of crack. Joe, it's me. He'd quickly hide his before he let me in, because that's what we're like, isn't it? I'll give him a little bit of mine. Mine's gone, I'll just wait all night till he gets his own. All night. After a little while, you can see he's getting restless. Oh, yeah, a little bit from earlier. Yeah, get that. And then we take that talk absolute shit to each other all night. And if I slept, I'd wake up in the morning absolutely destroyed with anxiety, depression and fear. My mind and my body screaming, aching from the pain in my own reality. And I just need alcohol, heroin and crack immediately now. Now, I thought I was using to escape my reality, but I found out that I wasn't. I was using to try and overcome a craving, book calls it, that was beyond my mental control. So I'm going to do it anyway, am I not? So I remember I come out of his house one morning. No money, withdrawing from heroin, need a drink of alcohol. Nothing going on, I've got to go out and get money. I'd like to tell you I was a grandiose house burglar. Yeah, £92,000 in my last rock. You know what I mean? It was pitiful, I was running out of shops. Anyway, I've gone into this shop, took a big, you know, I don't know if anyone's seen it, big gigantics like that, Guinness Book of Record, you know them ones. So I walk out of the shop with one of them and just, it's bigger than me. The woman just looked at him. She just phoned the police. God bless her. Anyway, I didn't know that. So I went up the road, went into Gap. Quick! I had to grab five shirts like I'm doing an armed robbery. You know, the young girls that worked in there, just let him go, him. Right, anyway, so I'm walking past the first shop, bang, the police come out, you're under arrest. I'm one of these, oh, no. I'll get arrested, I'm just going to start crying. I'd never tell any chaps that, back in the day, of course. So I end up in the police station, this is it, look, get the doctor, now! Get the doctor! There's nothing going on but the doctor. Give me some DF-118 and as many Valium as I can get immediately. I'm sick. Irish doctor come round. Hello, Mr. Hilliard. Is it you again? I'm like this. Oh, doc. Just give me the fucking tablet. In the cell. You know, the policeman, I used to hate him. I can't believe. God bless them. I can see now they were just trying to help. They used to open up the little flap, you know, and they'd sit looking. Oh, you don't look well, son. Do you want us to make a couple of calls and get you a bit of help? I'll be like this. Spitting poison. Spitting venom. Know that? And I'm one of these guys. I just want something. Like, just give me anything. I'll be like, just give me a mulberry light, anything. But I just need something, even if I don't need it. Oh, God. Anyway, this is what happened the last time. He said, he's opened the thing. He said, you don't look well. Do you want a bit of help now? I said, yes. I'm cooked. So anyway, someone come round, done a little assessment. Long and short of his, ended up in another prison cell. Been in some before, I think it's irrelevant how many, but this is what happened. I was 32 at the time. Got into this prison cell. and I could see clearly my life, what it would become. And I knew this ain't never going to change. It's always going to be the same. And I could see it clearly, and I knew that. You know, and the book calls it an illness on page 18, and it hadn't stripped me of anything external, like houses, money, cars, businesses, anything to that effect, because it never allowed me personally, and I don't say it to separate myself from you, but it never allowed me to gain that. But what it did rob me of was my pride. You know what I mean? My self-esteem. You know what I mean? A little maybe snippet of dignity that I once might have was gone. And I knew it. And my hands was up in the air, and it's called surrender. And that surrender got me here. But I'm under no illusion that surrender will keep me here. I surrendered this morning, bang, hands and knees. X amount of days down the street. And looking back on it, what I actually needed was a prescription for a miracle. And I found that in the form of cocaine and others. And thank God for the gunslingers, the book workers, that were doing the one-on-one work with maniacs like me when I arrived here. Because where would I be had it not been for them? So this is what happened. I end up from that prison cell in another facility for vulnerable adults with drug and alcohol problems. Next minute, I'm in the group, sitting next to this woman who I thought I loved. CA coming every second Thursday with the books. So I'm sitting next to her discussing our plans for the future. Two maniacs in the asylum. Anyway, she's got some issues with alcohol. She's got the book. So the guy said to her, all right, my love, do you want a book? So she took it anyway, even though she had one, because she's like us and one's never enough. Now she's got two books. She said to me, do you want one of my books? I said, yeah. Anyway, I took the book off her, had a look at the doctor's opinion in this, and it explained some stuff to me that could never otherwise be accounted for. Like, explain shit to me like, right, you know you've got to go to court on Monday morning. It's now Sunday afternoon. If you don't go, it's going to be a warrant out for your arrest and you're going to get put in prison. Right, I'm going to go. I need to be there. Wake up Monday morning. What I'll do is I'll just go and get one first, then I'll go to court. The important appointment just couldn't be met. Explain shit like that to me. And so anyway, I left that environment, walked into a meeting on the South Coast, homeless, jobless and penniless, smashed through this book, boom, 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 quick. I've never looked back since. Right? And because the steps are designed to be worked fast and furiously. Like, for me, this was the last house on the block, and I knew it. So I wound up in this meeting, someone helped me. If you knew, it was called a sponsor. I don't really like the word, my sponsor and my sponsee, it's like the ego gets attached to it. Someone helped me, he was a nice man. Didn't bark orders at me, you know what I mean, and command me to do whatever. He'd give me the truth, but he spoon-fed me it with love. And that's what I needed. Because you bark orders at me, I'm just going to attack you. I was a maniac. No, I'm not receptive to that. What I was receptive to was love. And that's what you give me. And it was a very simple thing. We opened up the book. He went, this is the problem. Is that you? I said, yes. I could see I was going to do it again, whether I wanted to do it again or not. Where you at with God? I didn't have an issue with that. I was born into an Irish Catholic family. I went back to that I always knew anyway. Then we done a set specific prayer. Then he went, right, do a bit of writing. Everything you're angry at, what you're scared of, and your conduct around women. Give that to him. Moved a bit up the street. He went, right, get off your ass. You're going to have to go and make restitution with some people. Probably as well some people you'd rather not see. But I went back to the community that I come from when God put me in that position and paid the money back. Yeah, and some of the people that I was going back to, they didn't give a shit about no spiritual program of action. You know what I mean? These are the kind of cats that just want their money. Like, there's an old saying where I come from, talk's cheap, money buys asses. You better come with something. Do you know what I mean? So that's what it was about. So now I can walk back into that community free.
because I don't want to be in bondage. I've been in bondage all my life. So then we got to the end of the process. He went, right, see what we've done with you. I said, yeah. He said, now you need to turn around again and do that to someone else. What? Because I've got a mind that says I can't. You see? I've got a mind that says I can't do that. But my experience says I can. But I didn't have any, so I had to go and get some. And that's what I had to go and do. You see, because the truth ain't in my mind. The truth is in our experience in all things. So I had to go and get that in that area. And then that kid went and worked with someone else. And then that kid went and worked with someone else. And then that kid went and worked with someone else. And bang, thus we grow. And they're all still clean and sober. Oh, I'm just kidding. Fact is this, I don't know where half of them are now. But I'm still here. I remember ringing up a guy who took me through. I said, you know what, I don't feel I'm a very good sponsor. I was maybe 2 years clean at this point. He said, why is that? I said, they're all using these fellas I'm taking from. He said, but are you still there? I said, yeah. He said, well then, goodbye. The fact is this, look, it's my job to carry this message out of the book the best way I know how to do it. And present that in a healthy way to them. Right? Now, if they catch the spark and move up the street with us and go and help someone else, lovely, let's go. If they don't, and they move up the street and go and sell drugs and sleep with every female that comes into their arena, then I'm not responsible for that. You know, if they go and travel the world and have 6 babies and start 3 businesses, I'm not responsible for that either. I've got a mind like this, look. Johnny over here is travelling the world, he's just come back from Egypt, he's going to Thailand next month. I'll be like, see my job. Johnny's doing good. Then we got Billy over here, he's not doing good. He's causing some problems. Yeah, you know I'm not sponsoring him no more, don't you? No, I think it's about me. Take it to me. It's not about me. You know what? As a result of doing this work, my life's been resurrected, reassembled, and I mean that. You know, I weren't someone that came here and got their life back. I was someone who came here without one and got one. You know what I mean? Yeah? And I know where my bread's buttered. So I stay here with you. I don't feel the need to go anywhere else. You know, and I dig my heels in deep and do what needs to be done. You know, that's what I do. Because it would be very easy for me, wouldn't it, to just done this work, get all the fruits of sobriety, bye-bye, ta-da. Where's he gone? Oh, he doesn't do this anymore. I know where my bread's buttered. I do this, regardless of whether you're doing it or not. My experience has been this as well. I don't say this to scare anyone. The further I've moved away from the alcohol and the drugs, the worse this disease has got. The worst this disease has got. And I need more help. I need help more so now than I ever did when I got here. Like, and I mean, awake to that. This is what has a tendency to happen. Like, book says, when you wake up, ask God to direct your thinking. Get up. Have a cup of tea, have a cup of tea, have a cup of tea, have a cup of tea. Don't do that. Have a cup of coffee, have a cup of coffee, have a cup. Have another cigarette, have another cigarette, have another cigarette. 3 cups of tea, 4 cigarettes. I think I'll ring up work sick. 150,000 excuses cycling around my mind, what I should say to work, why I can't come in. Then a little bit of sanity comes. You better pray, son. Because by the looks of things, your fucking life depends on it. So So I'll bow down to this power and say, please enter and take charge of my life. Because without you, I'm nothing. I'm done. And it comes and I feel better. And I found out this through my own personal experience. If you pray long enough and hard enough, and in your own way, you find a way to be still alongside that, it is possible to find out who you are. It is possible to feel the presence of the Almighty, the unknown, that power which is God. I know because it's a process I continually engage in. And you know what? I've had fantastic experiences in recovery. I've had some experiences that are not fantastic. There's been challenges along the way. There's been health problems, money issues, job losses, this, that, the other. But you know what? In the midst of it all, God's all powerful and ever present. The compulsion to use alcohol and drugs was removed from me immediately when I'd done this work, and it's never come back. So it's never about alcohol and drugs. It's just about, with God's help, when you're up, getting past what I may need to get past, and that may benefit someone else a little bit up the street. You know, I've had fantastic experiences alongside it. We've had a daughter and my partner's down there. Stand up, Sarah. You stand up. You stand up. She's nearly 12 years sober. We've had a beautiful little daughter. Her name's Matilda. She's now free. She's already in prayer. Lovely, healthy. Have you done your prayers, Matilda? Fantastic. We went to India, travelled around India. We're off to the West Indies later on this year. You know, I've got educated in recovery. You know, God give me power, man. You know what I mean? Not just sitting in unity service and recovery. Simple, nice, fucking week. You know what I mean? Jesus. God give me power to go out into life and live it and have experiences, and that's what it's about for me. That's what it's about. God's been good. And you know what? I don't know what's around the corner. In my arrogant mindset, sometimes I think I do. I know what it looks like. I've got it all mapped out. This is going to happen. I don't know. I don't know. But you know what? My life's healthy. My life's good. Even when this mind says, you're not doing too good. This is bad. It's still better than it's ever been. It's still better than it's ever been. You know. And I'm going to end it with a little reading in the book. And I always end talks with this. And it's by a guy called Dr. Bob. And I believe God used him and others as vehicles to start the AA thing. And without that, none of us would be here. And this is what he says. If you think you're an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what's in the book, I feel sorry for you. If you still think you are strong enough to beat the game alone, that is your affair. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking and using for one and all and sincerely feel you must have some help, we know that we have an answer for you. And it never fails. If you go about it with one half the zeal you was in the habit of showing when you was getting another drink or drunk, your Heavenly Father will never let you down. And there is but one Heavenly Father of light who presides over us all. That one is God. May you find him now. Thanks for asking.